Edge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some UVA sports, shall we? Hi, I'm Chris Graham here on the podcast on a Tuesday, talking solo with you as we'll go across the UVA sports landscape, also the ACC, a little bit of ACC more generalized talk as we, we kind of break down. Let's start with UVA basketball. Jerry Carter and I covered this topic a bit yesterday. Tony Bennett, I wrote a column today. Tony Bennett, what an odd guy turning down money. And we all heard the news yesterday, and again, we talked about it on the podcast yesterday. Tony Bennett, it was revealed by UVA Athletics, and I'm sure he just loved the fact that his buddy Eric Bakker sent out a press release about this. I'm sure there was some twisting of arms by probably Carla Williams, Eric Bakker, Jim Daves in the sports media relations department at UVA saying, Tony, we've got to do this. We've got to brag a little bit on you. You're not bragging. We're bragging on your behalf. This is what I always tell marketing clients. Our Guthrie Press Company has some marketing clients. You're not doing it. We're doing it for you. But the word was that UVA wanted to give Tony Bennett a significant raise, and he said, nope, I'm good. I got more than I need, more than I deserve, he said. And, put that money elsewhere. In fact, he and his wife Laurel pledged $500,000 to the university to start a career development program for current and future UVA basketball players. So not only do I not want your money, but here I'm giving some of it back to you. That's a different thing. And, you know, Jerry and I talked about this on the podcast yesterday. The when you add it all up, the various ways that a coach is paid, you know, the official salary and then the extras that come in from different sources, Tony Bennett's reported salary is in the $4 million range, just over $4.1 million. And so he's the fourth highest paid coach in America right now, highest paid college basketball coach in America. And fourth, that's not bad. There are 353 Division I schools. Power Five, you know, if you want to use that terminology from football, there's roughly, what, about 60, 65. So he's still fourth. still fourth out of whatever. You're fourth. But first is $9 million. Coach Calipari at Kentucky, Coach K at Duke, both in the $9 million range. And so to be fourth, and then Tom Izzo is third, and he's just a sliver ahead of Tony, at close to $4.2 million. So if you're making up difference between four and nine, there's a lot of movement there. And Tony is under contract for 7 more years. He extended another year after this offseason, or during this offseason, I should say. And I don't know what it would be. I don't know if it'd be $1,500,000, $2 million, $3 million, whatever it'd be. But it'd be more money for 7 years. You add it up, it's probably, you're talking between $10 and $20 million. He's turning down, at the least. And then, when you start at, and of course, if you get a raise now, the next time your contract's up, the way raises work, your raise is off the what you make now. So, it's he's over the lifetime of he's 50 years old, just turned 50 this summer. Tony is, he's got 15, maybe 20 years left. Depends on, how long he wants to coach and how long we make him coach, because we love championships and we love the, this has been such a golden era of UVA sports, golden UVA basketball in particular. So 15, 20 years, you're talking probably this decision is costing him $30, $40 million, $50 million, somewhere in that range. That's nothing to sneeze at. I know the guy makes a lot of money already, but, you got kids. They're going to have kids. You can take care of several generations here. And so he turns it down. And that's a very Tony Bennett thing to do. And it's actually, a lot of UVA folks. Chris Long comes to mind. Did I tell this story yesterday? I don't think I did. I'm waiting for my good buddy Jay, as we're looking to reconnect for the first time in a few years, actually, before the UVA-Florida State game the other night, waiting out front in front of the West Gate, and I'm looking at my phone, and the guy standing next to me, literally almost arm to arm, is Chris Long. And I really wanted to say, hey, Chris, man, I don't want to stalk you, but I just want to say I admire your effort in the Water Boys Project, the project to dig wells in communities in Africa that don't have access to fresh water. But I didn't want to be a fan. He looked like the guy was having a good time. He was waiting for friends himself. And so I didn't say anything, but I really wanted to. I really just wanted to say I don't care about the football's great, obviously, 2 Super Bowls, great UVA career and everything else. But, it's one thing to admire someone for football. It's another thing to say, dude, you're changing the world in a good way. Malcolm Brogdon has jumped in on that effort. I think Justin Anderson is partnering there with Malcolm on a sort of a, you know, a basketball wing of the Water Boys project. And so, you know, in that vein, then Tony Bennett giving money back feels like a UVA thing to do. And in this day and age, I think it's something to be lauded, not just for the fact of saying don't give them any more money, but, you know, so many people now who have so much, so many of our multimillionaires and billionaires fighting for tax cuts so that they can have even more when at a time when so many people have little. You know, it is admirable in that respect. So Tony Bennett definitely deserving the plaudits he's getting. And I just wanted to add to that. I guess heap upon that if we could. Let's now switch gears and talk some serious sports, right? You know, we can't just talk all the good touchy-feely stuff. UVA football, big win over Florida State this past weekend, rising to number 21 in the national rankings. And this matchup this weekend with ODU coming up on Saturday night, you could call it a trap game. You could easily call it a trap game. You got Florida State last week. You got ODU this week. You got Notre Dame next week. And so you're a 30-point favorite against ODU, in-state, I wouldn't say rival. You've never played them. At least haven't played them since, I think it was the 30s, the last time these two teams met in football action. So in-state foe, let's call. 30-point favorite. And, you know, so you could say that, but then ODU was a 4-touchdown underdog 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago as we're talking now. Week two, we're going into week four this week, when they played at Virginia Tech and lost that game 31-17, but it was a game that was a 1-touchdown game for much of the fourth quarter. And, of course, we know that ODU also defeated Virginia Tech last year when they were also a 4-touchdown underdog. So, you know, just because they're 4-touchdown underdogs, you don't overlook this team, to say the least. Coach Mendenhall, I asked about this at his presser yesterday, Monday. His response was, the question, general question being, might we catch the Hoos looking ahead? Coach Mendenhall's answer, I know there is intrigue because of the in-state matchup and the game versus Virginia Tech a year ago and this year. I think it's a fair assessment to say what this game could look like. That game was close and contested and competitive. Yes. Coach Mendenhall is not looking past this rival, this opponent. I'm wondering if ODU's showing against Virginia Tech, the Monarchs had last week off bye week. You don't want a bye week after 2 weeks, but you get what the schedule makers give you. I wonder if that's the function more of Virginia Tech. Losing to Boston College by a touchdown, Boston College got blown out by Kansas in Chestnut Hill this past weekend. Virginia Tech beat Furman by a touchdown. So you just maybe Tech's weaker this year, at least at this stage, than we expected, projected. But that said, yeah, you know, because ODU won its first game of the season, week one, over Norfolk State, FCS opponent, 24-21, and really struggling that game to get to that stage. You know, the matchup, quick rundown of this team. Stone Smart, junior college transfer, is the quarterback. He'll look familiar when you see him Saturday night in a sense of how he plays. In the vein of Bryce Perkins, UVA's starting quarterback, he's a dual-threat quarterback. In the game against Tech, we'll use the stats just from that one. 16 of 30, 122 yards passing, 16 runs, 48 yards on the ground. Kept the chains moving with his feet, largely. And a guy that, I remember watching that ODU Virginia Tech game. He's from California. The ACC Network announcing team kept emphasizing how it was the biggest crowd he'd ever played in front of, like 100 times. Like, that was a big deal. And that was the only game note they had from ODU, apparently. He did go down late in that game, and I don't know the status as of yet. As I'm talking right now, I'm going to look up the Bobby Wilder press conference and see what the latest is on Smart. I tried to look his name up today. There was no news on Stone Smart, and whatever the case may be. He did go down in that game. It looked like it was a calf or ankle injury. I'm not sure, again, his status, but certainly you want to prepare for that, at least until you know otherwise. ODU gained 324 yards total offense in that game. Did not turn the ball over and forced two Virginia Tech turnovers, and that's partly why that game was a little closer. Of course, those two turnovers I say that, and then I remember that the two turnovers were in the fourth quarter when the game was already a one-touchdown game, and ODU could not convert on either of those to tie the game up or, you know, get within 7 points. So they're a good team. I think Coach Water does a really good job. Mendenhall said the schematics offensively are sound, same on defense, same on special teams, the personnel is strong. That is about as non-comment as you can get from a coach about a team. But we'll have more on the sort of the come down nature of this game. I don't say come down like you have to come down and play ODU, but certainly the possibility exists for an emotional letdown for this game. We'll talk more about that tomorrow on the podcast. But UVA playing ODU, it's Saturday night, 7 o'clock, fourth straight night game for this Virginia team. Third of the four being at home. I will actually be able to be there. I'm not sure if I'll be there for the kickoff, but I've got a VMI football game. VMI, I've been doing radio broadcasts for VMI football the last several years. They play at 1:30. Ostensibly, that game's over 4:30, 4:45. I'll get in the car. I'll drive back from Lexington to Waynesboro, meet my wife. I'll drive over to Charlottesville. I'll get to Charlottesville probably a few minutes into the first quarter. I'll get to the stadium a few minutes into the first quarter. With a wife who's had to walk for a mile really quickly down a hill. So that won't be any fun in that sense, but it will be fun to watch two football games this weekend. So, UVA ODU, 7 o'clock kick, ACC Network, which I don't have anymore. Let me make an aside on that. I don't have any more because I had Lumos Networks. I've talked a lot about that on the podcast, and now I got to update folks. Had Lumos Networks, the local carrier in Waynes, a local carrier in Waynesboro and some surrounding areas. I understand they have some customers all the way down to Roanoke, maybe over to Charlottesville, which is kind of hit or miss where you are. For example, I'm in Waynesboro, which is the home base of Lumos Networks, but there are people who live a few blocks away from me who can't get Lumos. So it's a very spotty kind of thing. It's a fiber optic based cable network, cable provider, whatever the case may be. It didn't work out. The pictures froze often. The options in terms of on-demand TV, this has nothing to do with ACC Network, it's just on-demand TV, there were just no options. Very few movies, very few things at all. The DVR never worked. And the folks there were great. They tried really hard. You know, the people who came to install were really nice. The folks, again, the customer service. But you know, as nice as everybody was, just didn't work. And couldn't watch football on Sunday. Couldn't watch Red Zone on Sunday. The picture kept cutting off, so I just ended up not watching NFL on Sunday. That was sort of the last day. We changed back over to Comcast on Monday, and we had that scheduled already. And Comcast, I mean, gosh, today, but they were here yesterday. Guy was nice. The installer was great. Great. And then today around 12 o'clock, 12:10 or so, our service cuts out, and I'm thinking, of course, I mean, my natural assumption is this is probably a system-wide outage of some sort. That happens from time to time. It's kind of weird that it happens on first full day of us being back with Comcast, but, you know, whatever. So 10 or 15 minutes into this outage, I realized, maybe I should just call because I don't know that anybody's reporting this. I was on Twitter. I was on Facebook. I didn't see anybody else talking about this, chattering about this. This is weird. Maybe this is very localized. Maybe it's my block or something. And I call and find out my service had been suspended because of something. I mean, we had left 2 weeks ago. We you know, made a big deal about that. They didn't have ACC Network, wanted to leave. We came back. This customer service salesperson last week offered us this deal, that deal, et cetera deal. And then we get a bill in the mail this morning, which is fine. You're supposed to get a bill. We call, and 45 minutes later, we find out, well, you didn't pay the bill. Well, you just sent it this morning. I mean, what the heck are you talking about here? Needless to say, not happy there either. I mean, we had a guy handed my wife a business card yesterday when the installer was here and said he was a regional manager and, I mean, wanted to make sure we were all good. You know, call if we're not. I don't want to call. I don't want to... You know, it just isn't good. I mean, you can't make it right now. We dealt with the situation. We're back online. It just felt like a kick in the balls to, you know, I mean, that's just whatever. Not happy. So, you know, I'm gonna blame this on the Nats now because if not for the Washington National and not the Nats on Masson, I guess the Peter Angelos the Orioles. If not for Peter Angelos and the Orioles. Not allowing Masson to go through the MLB TV package, I would just be a YouTube TV guy right now. I mean, screw. I hate, you know, say it if the regional manager's tuning in because I said something about Comcast, but you know, screw Comcast. You guys treat us like crap again. The Lumos people are just inept. I did a YouTube TV 1 week free trial as we were, you know, making our decisions about what to do about ACC Network. Seemed to work great. So, you know, if not for Mass and not showing, well, not being a part of the MLB Network packages and blacking out games, you know, and if honestly, if this was next month and baseball season was over, that'd be 6 months of YouTube TV for me. So I can't say anything good about anybody right now. And I know, you know, there are some people who are working really hard. The Lumos customer service people, the installers, the salesperson I worked with, all great people. The guy was here from Comcast yesterday. That regional manager guy was real nice. But, I mean, you know, one company just can't provide a service and the other is just run by assholes. So, you know, the people that we dealt with are fine, but the company ethos is just to be, you know, to stick their nose in the air and act like they don't care about customers. So that's just not good. So whatever the case may be there. Now we'll get back on track here. UVA football. We talked about the ODU game. A couple tidbits from yesterday's presser that we'll pick up on. Bronco Mendenhall talking in-state scheduling. You know, ODU this weekend. We got Liberty later in the year, up in November, back in November, I should say, towards the end of the season. You know, played William & Mary week one. Bronco talked about this when he was talking that infamous talk with the Board of Visitors last summer. He would much rather play games against lighter opponents without saying that word. I don't know the term he used, but the in-state foes, both ODU and Liberty, being 1A teams, FBS teams, ODU being in Conference USA, Liberty being independent, that he'd love to play more games against those two, would love to play some FCS teams like William & Mary in futures. Richmond, he's already played a couple times. Just because when you have early season games and you have a choice, as he said, would I, you know, go cross country to play Oregon or can I stay at home and play Liberty or ODU? I'd rather stay home and play in state. And the Liberty series is now a six-game series. When he first got to UVA, he was sort of handed the ODU series, a three-game series, two games in Charlottesville, one in Norfolk. What was originally announced as a three-game series with Liberty became a six-game series. This is year two of that series, and I can't fault him. You know, right now the way things go, you know, you don't get credit. Unlike in the with basketball, you know, a basketball team looks to schedule, Tony Bennett looks to schedule tougher games in non-conference play because that can, you know, boost your seeding, you know, if you don't play those games, it can harm your seeding when it comes to the NCAA tournament selection committee doing its job in March. Right now, the playoff, and I can't believe I'm even saying UVA football thinking about what it might do as far as a playoff goes, but it is thinking in that way. The four-team playoff doesn't reward you or penalize you for your scheduling. If you're 12-0 or 13-0 or 12-1 or whatever the case may be, and you're a Power 5 conference champion, and UVA, as we're speaking right now, could very well be in that position in a couple of months, 3 months, I guess. You know, if you get past this weekend, you know, don't overlook anybody. Beat Notre Dame next week and, you know, do what you're supposed to in ACC play. Play Clemson and Charlotte and win that game. You could be in the mix for a playoff berth. And at the end of the day, you're not rewarded or penalized for who you play non-conference-wise. Look at Alabama. They're playing cupcakes non-conference-wise. Clemson. I mean, you up and down that list there. So, yeah, play those games. Play these teams in state. And it's good for them. You know, obviously the ODUs and Liberties of the world get a nice check when they play in Charlottesville. There is each team does get to host Virginia in the future. They get huge, you know, marketing and just overall boost from that with their alums when UVA comes to their places. And, hey, if they lose, they're supposed to lose. And if they win, just like last year, ODU – beating Virginia Tech, if you win that game, then it's even better. So, you know, it's good for everybody involved. Virginia, you know, gets to play close to home, and those schools get the allure of playing Virginia and some money for the trouble. So good for everybody. I can agree with Bronco on that, given now we're again talking about Virginia even thinking about playoffs. Switching gears again, let's talk about Bronco and that late unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. That awful pass interference call on Nick Grant. I don't care what you say, it was not a pass interference call. You could call similar contact on almost literally every play that's a pass play in a football game. If that's what you're going to call, if that's your standard, then no defender is safe. But you don't see that, and you certainly, if you don't see it the previous 58 minutes and 30 seconds, you should not see it with a minute 30 to go in the fourth quarter on 4th and 15. That was probably the message Bronco Mendenhall was trying to get across. Now he gets he argues the call, goes out on the sidelines or goes off the sidelines out on the field of play, and it looked like he was trying to get a review instituted. No review was being instituted. You know, I was in a press box. I'm not supposed to do this in a press box, but I'm saying it looked like the ball was tipped at the line of scrimmage. And in fact, eventually Bronco called timeout and was able to get a review in order to look at whether that ball was tipped. Turns out it wasn't. It was just a horribly fluttering ball out of the hands of James Blackman, the quarterback for Florida State. But it was definitely a knuckleball coming out of the hands. And so in that context, yeah, it was worth a look. And it was interesting that there was no look forthcoming. So I remember seeing the flag on the field, and Scott German sitting next to me, he says, "Oh my God, they flagged Mendenhall." I said, "Don't worry, it's just going to be a sideline warning." You know, you see that all the time in college football, NFL. A flag is thrown down the first time game officials want to warn the sidelines about, you know, coach or multiple coaches being on the field to whatever the case may be. Usually argue a call, obviously. And so I assume, hey, there's not been a sideline warning at all on either side in this game. That's what they're doing. They're giving them a sideline warning. No, they went straight. They skipped the sideline warning and went straight to 15-yard unsportsmanlike. So you went from 4th and 15 to 20. Horrible call on pass interference. Now it's 1st and 10, Florida State at the 50. So not only should the game be over, but now they got 30 yards on this play, that this bullshit call, and it was compounded by the officials. And so then the conversation in the press box, at least our part of the press box, turns to what in the world could Bronco have said to have the officials bypass the sideline warning and go straight to a 15-yard unsportsmanlike in the fourth quarter on a 4th and 15, bang-bang pass interference call that now gives Florida State another 15 yards and a 30-yard gain on this controversial play. What could he have possibly said, given that Bronco, we know, he says he doesn't curse him. I don't know anybody that can say they've heard him curse. I don't know any photographers who walked the sidelines. And, you know, there are – I meant to write this in the column, and it's just now popping back in my head. Well, maybe I kind of did. I have worked – yeah, I actually kind of did work this in. I've walked football sidelines. I haven't done it for a while, but I've walked football sidelines for years. I have sat on press row for basketball games for a long, long time. And it is just a every game, except for, you know, there are some coaches who will not curse. Tony Bennett, basketball. I'm thinking of basketball. That's, you know, where you really get to hear folks' characters kind of come to play. I've never heard Tony Bennett curse, never heard Roy Williams curse. But my God, Coach K, Gary Williams at Maryland, were artists in this field. You know, they took it to a new level. I'm talking Olympic level. And you don't see them, you know, you never saw Gary Williams get an inordinate share of decks, and Coach K feels like he owns the reps most of the time. So what could have Bronco Mendenhall possibly said? He insists he didn't say the dirty words, didn't say any of the magic words, and he did admit that he was upset with himself for getting the penalty, but the fact that he's saying he didn't say any magic words, dirty words, anything like that, further, just for me, this. You know, we haven't heard anything from the ACC. I would love to see this officiating crew and what their assignments are down the road. Somebody should be reprimanded for that. Whoever threw the flag should, and I guess the head official there, the referee, for not overturning it, for not talking the guy out of it, basically. Not, you know, they threw the flag down. It would not have been a saving face measure to just say it was a sideline warning, because that's what it should have been. But there are some people who shouldn't be working, if not this weekend, the rest of the year, as far as I'm concerned, as far as that goes. So a couple thoughts. We'll go around the ACC with a couple thoughts. You might have seen the news, heard the news. Everybody's talking about it on the talk radio, sports talk radio. Daniel Jones, named to start for the New York Giants. Wow, this is ACC stuff? Daniel Jones obviously played at Duke. In fact, he left early. Technically, he graduated from Duke, but he had another year of eligibility left. And surprisingly went sixth in the first round of the NFL draft. I say surprisingly. A lot of folks thought maybe late first round, more likely early to mid-second round. But the New York Giants said, that's our guy, and they drafted him. But the thought was, and not the, just the thought, but the talk of the you know, minicamp all the way through preseason, Daniel Jones is going to learn at the feet of Eli Manning. And if he plays this year, I think the ownership, whoever the owner is, Mara, I don't have the first name off the top of my tongue, but if Daniel Jones is playing this year, that's not a good sign, basically, was the thrust of that message in the preseason, because it means Eli Manning hasn't played well. Eli Manning hasn't played well. The Giants are 0-2 for the sixth time in seven seasons, and so I kind of thought, I mean, you know, I'm not an expert. I don't, you know, follow the NFL as closely as I certainly do UVA and ACC football and UVA and ACC sports, but, you know, when I put my thinking cap to it, I would have, if I had been asked to project when I thought Daniel Jones would start up at all, I didn't think it would go the whole year but without him starting. I did think it would, you know, sometime, though, around week six, week seven, week eight. We're in week three. He's already getting a starting nod. You know, Eli sticks out like a sore thumb on this kind of team, though. The Giants, I'm not sure you can rightly call them a rebuilding team. They're not rebuilding yet. They're still tearing down. And, you know, Eli's a 15-year veteran. He's won two Super Bowls. But to have him as the quarterback on a team that's still on its trajectory downward, it's not coming back up quite yet, doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, you have a quarterback like an Eli, a 15-year veteran, if your team is still a playoff contender, if there's a hope of a playoff, and if there's no hope of that, it is time to see, hey, Daniel Jones is here. He's not going to learn any more standing on the sideline holding a clipboard, giving the fake signals out, than he will getting reps in the game, getting the week the work during the week, getting ready for the reps during the game. And then, you know, he put up great numbers in the preseason. I think his completion percentage was like 85%. But that was against vanilla defenses and exhibition games. Now we'll see him against full-fledged, trying to beat you, defensive coordinator game plan kind of situations for the first time. And it's not going to be pretty, I'm sure, you know, right away. And even if it is, there are going to be some bumps along the road. But, you know, give him, you know, if health willing, give him 14 starts this year, and, you know, you'll have an offseason then for him to continue to improve, mini camps to continue to build, and then next training camp he'll go in as a starter. And you'll be able to, you know, really get a gauge going into next year what you got. You have him hold a clipboard for a few more weeks into November, whatever the case may be. You know, you're just delaying that growth that he could possibly have. So I think this move makes all kinds of sense. And, you know, good for Daniel Jones, and now we'll see what he's got. One other thought about the ACC, and then tomorrow we'll have a lot more about UVA and ACC football tomorrow on Wednesday. Wake Forest. Jerry Carter got me thinking this way yesterday, so I thought I'd expand upon it today. Wake Forest and my thoughts on Wake Forest football and where Wake Forest might end up this year. And, boy, you know, I want to double down on what I said yesterday on a podcast. I'm thinking solid number two. And I looked at ESPN's Football Power Index, which I did not think would verify my thoughts on this. and it's a little interesting to have to look at this because, you know, when you look at the Football Power Index, it's a neat feature. It puts all kinds of numbers into a computer and spits out results. And the Power Index has Wake Forest favored in six of their eight ACC games. For comparison, it has Virginia favored in seven of its eight ACC games, including the two we've already played, so five of the last six. Wake has not played an ACC game yet. The win over Carolina was a non-conference game. And so that doesn't mean that necessarily the Football Power Index has them going 6-2 the rest of the way, which would imply a 10-2 finish for Wake Forest because they will be 4-0 after beating Elon this weekend. They're going to that's going to happen, and that'll be the case. It just says that they'd be, you know, they're favored in six of eight games. Looking down the rest of the list of you know, how the Football Power Index projects each individual game and how that would add up over an eight-game schedule in the ACC, Florida State and NC State are favored in five of their eight, and then it goes the other direction. And Clemson, of course, favored in all eight of theirs. Louisville 2-6, Boston College and Syracuse 1-7 each, and boy, I mean, Boston College already has its win. They're not favored to win any of their remaining ACC games the way we stand right now. Whoa, Syracuse 1-7. They were preseason top 25. Now projected to go 1-7 in the ACC. At least you know, from a favorability standpoint by the FBI. In a sense, this doesn't. I mean, the numbers surprise me. I don't think for anything that Boston College and Syracuse are going to each finish 1-7 in the ACC. I don't think NC State's going to go 5-3. You know, after losing to West Virginia the way they did this past weekend, 4-4 or 3-5, definitely in order there. I'm not sure about Louisville at 2-6. I think they might have another win in them 3-5. Florida State, I can see. At 5-3, though, you know, they're 1-2 right now, 0-1 in the ACC, so there's two more non-conference games. You know, I see this Florida State team as a 7, perhaps 8-win team. The team that I saw them with my own eyes. Not the team I'm talking about that we saw on TV the last 2 weeks. The team that I saw play Saturday night in Charlottesville is a pretty good team. They didn't lose that game. Virginia won that game, the way I like to say things about that. So, Florida State, I think it comes down to Wake and Florida State for that number two spot behind Clemson. But man, nobody thought this before the season. I don't have it on the tip of my head, you know, where Wake was picked in the ACC kickoff rendering of things. But I can tell you what my mind's eye tells me. I was there to cover the ACC kickoff, and I was in the room, the breakout room, as we called it, where the writers and the ESPN folks all got together. And after the big ballroom interviews that was mainly, almost entirely for TV, we had a chance to, you know, go back in that smaller room and talk and get a chance, theoretically, at one-on-one questions with coaches. You know, you could have walked up to Dave Clawson probably played a game of cards with him and not been interrupted. It was so little interest in Dave Clawson at the ACC kickoff. So, and now he might be the coach. He might be a coach of ACC number, Coastal Division, or excuse me, Atlantic Division number two, maybe a 8 or 9 win team. You look at how they're doing it. I mean, you know, It's not like they've beaten Murderers Row yet. They're at to be 3-0. But Utah State is a good group of five team. Rice, not so good. UNC started 2-0. That counts again as non-conference. Jamie Newman, the quarterback, is throwing for 309 yards a game, completing 69% of his passes, 7 touchdowns, 1 INT. Run game's averaging 200 yards a game. Newman's a dual-threat quarterback, too. He's a guy that's second on the team in rushing. Defensively, that's where you have concern. They're giving up 416.7 yards per game. So that is the one area where you'd say, you know, that's where you get them. You can move the ball on them a little bit. But they're not going to have – you can't foresee that they have really any kind of a chance against Clemson. Whereas Florida State, Clemson, at least from a talent standpoint, Florida State's got talent. And you got to think that they'll stay in the game longer with Clemson. But – the Wake-Florida State game, that's going to be the you know, assuming Clemson's going to go 8-0 in the ACC, you know, the whatever drama there is in the Atlantic is for who's number two. Wake Forest, Florida State, that's going to be a fun one to watch coming up. So that wraps our podcast up for today. Again, come back tomorrow. We'll talk some more UVA and ACC football. We'll see what else we can get into as well. I still got to talk this week with Rod Mullins. We'll get back with Jerry Carter on Friday. I've got VMI versus Mars Hill on Saturday. Scott Radcliffe from JerryRatcliffe.com fame will be joining me on that broadcast as my color analyst for the game. And VMI looking to go 3-1 on the season. This is a program that had won one game total the last 2 years, has not had a winning season since 82. And so we have some fun stuff on the radio coming up. And it looks like I might be doing a high school game broadcast this week, too. Have more details maybe tomorrow. But I've been a gentleman who puts on Facebook Live and radio broadcast of games in the Charlottesville area reached out to me to see if I'd be available, which I am, to do the Western Albemarle versus Waynesboro game Friday night up the street from where I live, Waynesboro High School. So as long as he's able to get all the details squared away with the folks at WHS, hey, man, it'd be a busy weekend for me. There'd be a football game Friday night. There'd be a football game Saturday afternoon. And then I'm heading over to UVA ODU Saturday night. Sunday, I'll sleep. That'll be a good day, right? So a lot coming up this week here on Augusta Free Press with Chris Graham. But for now, I will sign off. And this is a UVA Thing Sportscast, so I will sign off the way I like to do. Wahoo! Wah!